Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 175. Guys, we have a Nerdist YouTube channel now. I know lots of people love YouTube channels, but we're actually making programming with budgets and stuff. That's going to launch April 1st. So we're going to be announcing the lineup for the channel very, very, very soon. And I think you might be pleased with some of the stuff, or you might not be. Maybe you're just an acrid ball of hate. But I still thank you for listening to the podcast. Even if you are a hateful person on the inside, I still appreciate your business. I'm not going to judge you. I'm a dick 40% of the time. 60% of the time, I'm all right. 40% of the time, cranky shit face. Would you go to the YouTube channel? It's youtube.com/Nerdist. Please click subscribe because this whole project will be supported by subscribers, and that will allow us to make more programming. And if you know the Instagram, then I have just acquired the Nerdist Instagram account. So I want to kind of use Instagram to give like a pictorial scrapbook of all the shows that we're shooting. So follow us on Instagram as well on the Nerdist username. And that is it for all that. I would like to thank Squarespace for coming back and being a sponsor on the Nerdist podcast. If you want to build a website, if you want to start finally, you know, if you want to blog, if you want to practice writing and you need a platform to do it on, Squarespace is definitely the way to go. Easy to use UI for creating and managing a website or blog. It's optimized for beginners, or if you're an expert in CSS, they can totally take care of you right there. There's hundreds of design templates to choose from. You can customize any of the designs to fit your needs as well. There's an iPad, iPhone, there's Android apps for updating your blog on the go. If you're a traveling person, based on customer requests, they've actually added Google's complete web font library. So there's over 300 fonts that are now fully integrated into their platform as well. Online resources and special support team will give you personal help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Also, if you need live classes to help all level of experience get comfortable with Squarespace, check out the class schedules at workshops.squarespace.com. So that's it. If you want to start the website or blog that you've been noodling around in your head, you finally have time to do it, go to squarespace.com, sign up for a free account. No credit card needed. Just try it out and start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code NERDIST2 and get 15% off for 6 months. That is squarespace.com. Use the offer code NERDIST and the number 2. And now this episode. I've been a cake fan since Fashion Nugget, when I first heard of them in the mid-90s. And we played the shit out of them at K-Rock when I worked there. And I actually got a chance to meet these guys a couple times while I was working at the MTV, and just super, super cool dudes, down to earth, nice guys, and really super, super smart, wicked smart, as some people on the East Coast would say. So we sat down with John McCrae during their sound check. I had just come back from shooting the special. I went straight from the airport right to the Palladium, and then John, the timing was perfect. He hopped off stage, right, finished the sound check, and then we sat down and talked. It was me and Matt Myra and our producer, Katie, who's snickering over in the corner because I mentioned her name. Hi, Katie! Shout so everyone can hear you.
Hi.
That was Katie. We're here at Nerd Melt right now. You don't need all this background information. John McCrae was awesome. He sat down and talked to us for a while, and then we got to record the sound check. So stick around at the end of the podcast. We're going to play a couple of songs from Cake's sound check. And I strongly recommend that you pick up their album that came out last year, Showroom of Compassion, which is, of course, available on the iTunes or anywhere else you buy music. I don't know what your life is like, but wherever you get it, that's where you can probably get it. Here we go, the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 175 with Cake, parentheses, John McCrae. Say goodbye, Katie.
Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah, the mathematicians can't be touched because
you have to be smart enough to question what it is that they're doing.
But I found the same thing true. I'm trying to like rebuild this house, and with structural engineers, like same kind of deal. It's like just like don't question it, and if you, I mean, and they disagree with each other a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I mean they agree on the triangle.
Yeah,
that's the secure form.
You'd think math is pretty like. Well, it's true or not true.
Like, yeah, that's a lot of people go into it because they like that safe feeling of like binary, like yes and no. It's not like literature where there's a lot of opinion and stuff, or religion, or
it's pass or fail.
Yeah.
All right, so here we are. We're in the Palladium. I heard about half your soundcheck. I just got here from the airport.
Okay,
it was fucking amazing.
Where do you fly from?
I came from New York.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So you're tired.
I feel okay, actually.
I'm pretty tired. I came from four blocks away.
Oh, that is just... Fuck yourself, man.
Park of the Arclight. It was hard.
No.
Oh, God. I got here in time.
First, you're going to be okay.
Thank you.
You'll be all right.
I appreciate it.
Because obviously, you have to go through security to walk four blocks. You have to put everything in three on spot.
That's the future, actually.
That will be the future, just walking everywhere.
Yeah.
Just a security checkpoint in front of everyone's building. Yeah. It's like you have to get out.
Everybody's neighborhood is going to have a moat and a drawbridge.
Razor
wire.
Then Taco Bell wins the food wars, and then Demolition Man happens. It's a nice utopia.
RoboCop's Detroit. It'll all become Detroit.
No. I go by L.A. or San Angeles.
I just want some of those really cool... I just want some of those weapons that you see on those crazy, like, military tech shows where you can, like, knock someone down with sound waves. I just want that. Non-lethal weapons.
Or the microwaves where you can melt their insides.
I don't want to melt people's insides.
What, are you afraid of melting people's insides?
Yes, I am a little bit afraid of melting people's insides. Wouldn't you feel bad?
Are you man enough to melt someone's insides?
Wait a minute, I'm not a pussy. I'll melt someone's insides. You would feel... Because it's one of those things where it doesn't look like it's doing any damage. So you're like, this isn't that big of a deal. And they just crumple into a heap. And then you go, what? I just melted that guy.
Did anybody poo out the melted stuff?
No.
All right.
Why would it? Yeah, I guess...
It's got to come out.
Maybe later.
Let's think about that.
John McCrae, I feel like the last time I saw you was a very drunken, like, 3 days in, like, 98 or 9 or something.
Yeah.
You guys were playing the Palace when it was still the Palace, I think.
I think so, yeah.
And that was a fucking great show, and then we went out for a while.
Yeah.
And then I haven't seen you since. So
something bad happened.
No!
Who knows? We don't remember.
But I just want to say, number one, congratulations for still being around.
Yeah.
After all these years.
Yeah.
You look good. You look healthy. How's things?
Thanks. You do too.
Thank you.
I'm doing okay. I still sort of hate touring a little bit. I'm thinking about maybe dropping out of the music industry one of these days. I'm not sure when, but... You know,
really?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, you guys... Well, you've been doing music for like 20 years
now,
right?
Yeah, almost 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's understandable that I might be tired of...
You're 5 years
living in
your gold watch. You're going to get a gold watch in 5 years.
I don't think so.
There's 25th anniversary.
There's no gold watch in the performing arts.
No, it's a boot in the butt, I think, is what it is.
I think you just unceremoniously just stop doing it one day. I don't know if there's anyone comes in and gives you a thing.
Yeah, a lot of musicians are... It's actually the... precipitous decline in number of professional musicians in the last 10 years, According to the Department of Labor, it's decreased by 17%.
Wow.
Do you think that's
huge?
But is that because people just aren't claiming that as a profession? Because I feel like there's...
No, well, they have to claim it as a profession if they're making money from it. If they're actually, you know, paying taxes or whatever.
Ah, the internet strikes again.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But I have a feeling it's like... I think it's real because I know, like, people that you know, artists that you know, that probably we wish they were still playing and they're not.
So. Yeah,
yeah.
I think, yeah, so I know one in particular who I love, who I think is a very important artist, who's studying to become a bricklayer.
What?
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say who that is?
I'll tell you later.
Oh, man! That is a...
It's Billy Joel, isn't it?
No. It's an interesting... I think I believe that statistic, that it's, like, legit, because I've seen so many bands just to say, you know, we can't afford to make a record, or we can't... This is... It's... So many bands, because they don't have their back catalog, mm-hmm. like from the 70s yeah. and stuff, are like glutting the live thing. So,
oh, right.
So you have like,
oh, right.
all this competition and all this craziness. I mean, we're fine. If I want to like tour all year for the rest of my life, we can make a living, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't like touring, so.
I remember I remember having a conversation with you like in the 90s where even before everything kind of started to crumble in the music industry, and you said it's really hard to tour, and I think you gave me some number, like you go, look, for example, we just got offered like $100,000 to do a week's you know, like a month's worth of shows in Australia, and I go, oh my god, that sounds amazing. And you go, wait. And you went through and walked down like every piece of the pie that gets carved out until you're like, in the end, I think maybe I'll make $1,000, you know, like to be able to cover everything
for a month of work.
For a month of work, yeah.
And so the mythology that's like been passed down from the 60s and 70s is like rock star, philosopher, king, coddled, overfed, television set out of hotel room window kind of thing. Which is just not real. But I guess maybe a lot of people keep quiet about it because they think it adds value somehow.
Yeah, they don't want to know that you lead the same kind of life that a banker leads. Yeah. Like, well, I go to work, I go back to my put my bed, and then I get up the next day.
That's right. So there's a hood ornament sort of nature to the job.
It's so weird. Like Tommy Walter of the Eels and then of Abandoned Pools, he worked with me at the Apple Store. Like in between Abandoned Pools, like they put out their record, and then he was like, I'm gonna go work at the Apple Store and be a genius. And he was there with me for like a year. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I gotta write TV jingles or something. I can't make any money on the road or anything. And it's just like, wow, it's fascinating.
Well, it is weird. I mean, it is that sort of it seems like the paradigm shift certainly was in favor of like, you know, teenagers or, you know, young people just making free stuff on their computers.
I don't even think... Yeah, I mean, that's just natural sort of free candy is exciting thing.
Right.
But, I mean, what I guess if I'm going to be bothered about something, it's not that. It's more that Verizon is getting rich off of all this, like, culture that all the narratives of stories and melodies and independent films and everything... are going down Verizon pipelines and on YouTube.
Right.
And like I'll pop up, you know, our video on YouTube, and I'm fine about our stuff being up there, but like a Newt Gingrich ad is like right before our video, and it's like I have no say so. Like we can either say no, we don't want to be on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
or they just get to do whatever they want. And it's sort of this sort of weird binary sort of dilemma where you can either be completely unrepresented or they get to put a Newt Gingrich ad and, you know, and make money from that ad.
Right.
You know, and so I've talked to a lot of authors and independent filmmakers lately who are just like, you know, we're not mad at people for downloading our stuff, but if like the guy from Mega Upload is making $175 million from ads that come from people downloading culture,
just using the bandwidth,
then culture workers should somehow find a way to be part of that so they can keep on eating food.
Yeah, that is, it's kind of funny, like some of the guys who run like the sort of like the Pirates Bay type stuff are like, come on, we're all about free expression, like, well, you're making all the money and these people are not.
Exactly, and I think they're doing film shoots, I mean, for like photo shoots of like the rap star in a pile of money with diamonds everywhere. That, and then the, it's a, like a meme that's going around all over on the internet that says, you know, file sharing is hurting artists. And it's like, who paid for that photo shoot?
Oh, man.
Google or, you know, who's, there's, yeah, anyway, I should be quiet.
No, I mean, but it's an interesting, it's an interesting concept that there's always some machine in place, and whether, you know, like a 15...
I should say for the listener, if you're hearing things in the background...
Oh, we're backstage.
There are crazy carts going on.
Yeah. There's crazy carts? That sounds fun.
Yeah, no, it's a game.
Like big wheels and...
Yeah, it's very similar to Mario Kart.
It feels like there's... oh, I want Krupa.
Yeah.
It feels like there's always some sort of a machine in place, whether it be the music industry, you know, 15 years ago, or... just the sort of, you know, whatever it is now.
Right.
Do you prefer one or the other, or is it just like, it's all the same?
Well, I mean, certainly the old music machine was corrupt and sort of, you know, I feel very hateful about that machine. But it's, I'm not sure the new one is necessarily better for musicians who want to eat food. It's actually...
Right.
I heard a lecture by a guy who actually broke it down and showed like the numbers of like, you know, iTunes and these like digital distributors. They're not really distributing in the old sense of the word, but they're taking like 30%, and then the record company gets like, you know, an indie record deal, they get about 50%.
Sure.
So you've got like 30 plus 50, and then you got 20 left.
Right.
And it's like, but it's on one song because it's like people don't buy albums anymore. So it's like there's a problem, you know, and there's a reason why we have 17% less musicians than we did 10 years ago, because it's just facts, you know. And I think it's an interesting time, and it's really great that the gatekeepers are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like the traditional music business gatekeepers are, you know, there's very few of them now, and you can break in and you can get attention for about 3 weeks, and you know, and it's very difficult now to sustain people's interests, you know, to keep what was that video that was like a couple months ago that where there was a dog, and you know, it's like, it's, oh, but what band was that? And,
right,
you know, so it's a great time, you know, for freedom of expression and cultural sort of ideas moving through space, but it's also like structurally it's very hard for people that make culture to keep it going.
But you guys were sort of, I think the fortunate thing for Cake is that you guys were kind of, I don't know, a culturally grandfathered in, like you had a foundation.
It's really
kind
hard.
Of heading into this revolution so that people, you already had an identity.
Yeah, absolutely. To be a band that's starting out right now is it's got to be really challenging.
I would think so, but I also think, you know, I don't know. It just seems like, well, there's a, you know, you can set up a show anywhere and you can just perform. And you're like, no, because you really need promoters, and you really like, there's still, it's like this weird hybrid. It's this weird sort of Frankenstein thing where it's like there's enough systems in place from the old model, but then there's a new model that doesn't quite fit in with the way the old model works.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see like some of the old systems give way to new systems. You know, there's definitely a lot that's anachronistic about, you know, this, like for instance, the touring machinery or a dispensing systems, you know, they're sort of like really, you definitely I see lots of room for improvement and increased efficiency when it comes to, you know, playing live shows and touring. There's a lot of like corruption that's sort of built into it and that refuses to go away.
Like what? Like what? What's been...
I'm here.
Oh, okay, yeah, I can't talk about it. I mean, because as a stand-up, it's just like, if I go do a show, it's like, well, it's me and a microphone. Actually, you know what though? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
like
you do.
I do, especially because, you know, like when we go do a show somewhere, if we go, sometimes we'll go, well, we need a screen for a thing we're in it, and the venue will go, oh yeah, that's like $900.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, what? Where'd you come up with that number?
Yeah, we got that. And it's exactly $900, which is always like, why isn't it $975?
Really?
Yeah. So there's that. There's tons of that. I would love to see musicians or artists or culture workers get together and buy and like go in on venues and go in on promotion and find a way to sort of create a cooperative, like an online cooperative.
Yeah.
Where we reduce the cost of all these things and get rid of the assholes that are stealing money from us.
I'm going to bet, though, that there might not be as many people who are as mathematically adept and responsible as you are. So you might get a bunch of artists who are like, yeah, man, that's great. And they're like, yeah. Hey, guys, come on. We got to buy toilet paper.
Well, that's a problem with artists. And that's why we've always been like, it's like taking candy from children. And also, culturally, there's this sort of... and you know, fetishizing of the being impractical, like as an artist. Like,
oh, right.
You're not supposed to care about food.
Right.
You know, and real artists.
You're not supposed to know how to add.
Yeah. Real artists don't know how to do things.
Right.
You know? And so there's that fecklessness that's, mm-hmm. I think, been fetishized. And that's, you know, there's all these cultural obstacles in the way of actually, you know, making substantive change.
But the sucky thing is, it's just, you know, and I'm sure a lot of this has changed for you in the last 20 years where you guys, I mean, I don't know, how much of an active role did you take in every facet of your careers early on? Or did you just sort of turn that over to the label?
We actually, our first album we released on our own label. So we, you know, various members of the band actually did those jobs of, you know, we found distribution in Europe, and actually French people liked our first album before anybody else, and we got good reviews, and like we did all that stuff. We like, you know, set up a distribution deal and found people that liked us and they talked about us. And I wasn't the one doing that, but we as a band, I did other jobs. I made a video and designed the record cover.
So you were like a Justice League. Everyone had a power.
Yeah, it was kind of cool, you know. But it's impossible to do that, have that sort of much participation in it if you're constantly on the road.
Yeah.
And so that's the real challenge. Like, maybe now with the internet, maybe there's a way of sort of, you know, doing some of these things ourselves, though, with some sort of really simple interface.
Sure.
You know. But when we first started out, there was a process of slowly relinquishing, you know, this control or that control or that, you know, another control to various outsiders that really didn't see the difference between our band and all the other bands. Like, they didn't understand us culturally.
And they ultimately don't give a fuck in exactly the same way that you give a fuck about your thing, because it's not their thing.
Right, yeah. And, yeah, so that's a problem, you know. But I, you know, I'm a little bit optimistic. I think that there could be some solutions here and there, just little solutions, no big solutions.
Yeah. I think you should start John McRae's Little Solutions, a video series, just like, hey, and like 10 parts, and each thing is just a little thing that kind of helps. I honestly, you have perspective that a lot of young bands don't have, and you could actually affect some serious artistic change.
Yeah, one thing that I think would be really great is a screening process for the, like, our handlers and people that who have our lives in their hands, like,
sure,
for instance, bus drivers. There's no like screening that I know of, and a lot of them are like on like all kinds of speed and stuff.
Right.
And you know, you wake up at 4 a.m. and the bus is like careening and going over the bumps, Christ, and stuff, and and I've asked managers and they're like, well, I think I'm sure that the company must, you know, but we don't know that.
These are not fucking FAA pilots. Like,
no,
these
are, a lot of them are, you know, used to be a truck driver for a little while and likes the music business. I don't trust anybody to drive a huge like machine that is into the idea of being in the music industry.
Oh God.
Right.
What did you do before bus driving? I was a meth farmer. What? I farm meth, drive around all night.
Well, I mean, the fact is that we don't know that these people are not. Some of them are great, you know.
Yeah.
So I think there could be some like little ways of improving,
sure,
our odds, you know,
of survival.
Yeah.
Of just actual survival.
Yeah, because I have musician friends that have, you know, become like, had nerve damage from bus accidents.
Oh my God!
You end up like Metallica, then you need a new bass player.
Yeah. Well, the hard thing is just I think you know, performers in general, there's a certain amount of impatience that comes with, like, no, I just want to perform.
Yeah.
And then you just don't want to fucking have to worry about all that stuff because it's not in your gut, you know?
Yeah, you're not thrilled about it.
No.
You're like, everybody, look at me. I'm on stage. It runs counter to being a responsible adult.
Right.
The sort of weird inherent sort of narcissism and egocentrism of being an entertainer is antithetical to worrying about whether the bus driver's on speed.
You have to worry about, you know, what's going, where are the t-shirts, and then where do those happen, and then what time are they opening the doors, and who's got the pat? Like, you still kind of have to manage yourself, which is not what you set out to do.
No, you don't. I mean, and there are people that have delegated those jobs really well, and they happen to find good people for periods, and then there's people who have, you know, had their careers ruined by you know, trusting the wrong people.
Yeah, I guess it's just like, sort of going back to what you said, the sort of romanticized idea, like that Joe Walsh song. It's like,
yeah,
like, I don't know, man. Everyone's just taking advantage. Yeah. No, I'm just fitting for the ride.
I'm just a groovy minstrel. Yeah. You know?
the character from that song, by the way, got fucking taken for a bath afterwards.
Like, I know he did. and that. In a way, having that character to reinforce those stereotypes is continuing to sort of have a negative effect.
Yeah.
You know, I think.
Well, and now we're such, I don't know, it's, well, I guess it's always been this way. Everyone's, all musicians now just look like parade floats to me. Like, there's just like, it's just, there's such a goofy parade. But now that I'm thinking about it, there was hair metal and before that, the 70s was crazy and all the, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really different from that point of view.
I think what they are is they're proxies. They're like Greek gods, or aspects of the human psyche that normal people, responsible adults, have to repress.
That theory.
And so we want Ted Nugent to fucking go crazy.
Yep.
And like, you know, do terrible things, and explode. And we'll listen to it on the weekends. But then on Monday, that very presence of Ted Nugent is going to allow us to go back into the cubby at work, you know? That he's doing it for us, so we don't have to.
I love that you brought up Ted Nugent. I made friends with, you know, Jack Blades.
Huh, I don't know who's that.
Jack Blades was in Night Ranger, and he was also in Damn Yankees.
There you go.
And Jack Blades told this story about, like, yeah, Ted Nugent after shows. This is the most disrespectful thing I've ever heard someone do. He used to stack girls like four on top of one another and just fuck them up and down. I'm like, that is sounds
awesome.
No,
okay,
it sounds. Why don't?
It's like a factory.
It's gross. Like, how are you? Like the.
It's the fastest way to spread diseases.
It's like, how are you? Like the third girl in a weird fuck Jenga stack. Yeah. And you're like, yep, this is exactly where things are really going according to plan. She's letting Ted Nugent fuck you. Like, that's so weird.
Third girl says, "At least I'm not fourth." Fourth girl thinks she's first. That's how it works.
Oh my god.
Wow, you really thought this through.
Well, I mean,
they all had parents and families, and they went to school.
So they're your maybe sisters and people.
God. That's fine. It's just, but you hear the mythology like that. I mean, it is like the gods thing is the perfect example. Like, that is part of the mythology of that. Yeah. Whether or not he actually did that, I don't know.
Who knows?
But it's just the mythology, you know, gets built up, and you think, yeah, it's awesome.
But I think it's like it happens in slightly different variations in different genres. So you have like the blues musician being the gritty sort of urban struggle that the white, like pudgy, sort of coddled lawyer can sort of have in this, like, the distilled suffering of like black people who've been like in jail or whatever in this huge CD collection. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a connoisseur of struggle and grittiness and. And it allows us in these different genres to sort of dabble in these sort of caricatures. And my only problem is that maybe in having the luxury of this sort of fantasy struggle that someone else is sort of making for you, that maybe that lawyer, for instance, is less inclined to have his own gritty struggle.
Sure.
Maybe it's easier for him to take the cush sort of corporate job instead of, like, you know, fighting for, you know, things that he
yeah, he can only experience it like 12 minutes a day.
Right, yeah.
driving home at night from the... From
exactly. The when the time that he likes most, which is when he's in his car.
But and then that's when he can really connect with the struggles of the common man.
Right.
In his car. With a fancy CD flip.
Well, yeah. Good for him living 12 minutes away from work.
I mean, that's not bad, yeah. Nice. In other cities, people get to do stuff like that. Well, not in Los Angeles. What would you say, I mean... Because pretty, you know, the first album I heard of your guys was Fashion Nugget, and I worked at K-Rock at the time, and it just exploded on K-Rock. And I feel like pretty quickly, the first time you hear a Cake song, you immediately go, I totally see the point of view.
Mm. Not everybody does.
Really?
Yeah, not everybody gets it.
I don't know. It made a lot of sense to me, and there's a certain, like, oh, these guys are cool and snarky, but funny, and not taking anything too seriously, and kind of ironic, and but still good. Like, I don't know. What was your sort of take on it at the time? Did you see any of that then, or was it just like we're just doing what we like doing?
I think our music was, in some ways, sort of a hostile, reactionary gesture musically against. A lot of the music that was popular at the
grunge.
Time we came out, yeah, which we saw as sort of big dumb rock
right.
in different clothing, sort of like
right.
like Rush in different clothing, like a different, slightly different fashion sense, but still
the ripped jeans just got baggier.
Yeah, exactly. And so I personally was the most fed up with big dumb American rock sound. And you know, some of it I heard in grunge, some of it I heard in different movements. But I guess I thought in the United States of America, maybe it would be way more subversive to make music that sounds small, you know, that's not just, you know, wide load, kind of like the oral equivalent of deforestation. Right?
That's an amazing metaphor for big, like, arena rock.
Right. But I guess the way I felt at the time was that it's not subversive in any way. And, like, there's just something that becomes really common to just have everybody turning it up to 11.
Sure.
And it also just didn't make sense for me to glamorize turning it up to 11 so much. Mm-hmm. And especially if, like, it's about math in a way. If there's a finite amount of resources on the earth, you know, it's a finite amount of minerals or oil or rare earth, like, that we need to make cell phones, the idea of turning it to 11 becomes, like, sort of questionable. And although it's like, as far, you know, capitalism needs a growth economy every month of the year,
sure,
it's actually, if you do the math, it's completely like a brick wall that we're gonna, like, be crashing into top speed pretty soon. And so that was the other thing in the back of my mind. But mostly people misunderstood our small sound for weakness. And
really?
Maybe you understood it, and a few other people sort of understood that, oh, they're trying to do that. But I think a lot of people thought, oh, okay, the whole thing is just a joke, and it's, their guitars must not be good enough to turn any louder.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I I hadn't thought of it contextually in terms of, it's sort of the antithesis of this other type of pop music that's happening right now. But now that you say that, it is literally the opposite in every way. Like, the lyrics are very crisp. All the sounds are very clean. Mm-hmm. Everything kind of cuts through like a laser in a weird sort of way, as opposed to just being fucking spread out and noise all over the map.
Yeah, yeah. So, which is, you know, not for everyone by any means, but I like when someone understands that, yes, that's what they're trying to do. There must be something else that they don't like very much, because otherwise, you know, for many years, we were just like, they played us on the radio, they played us on TV a little bit, but it was like sort of as the palate cleanser between the real songs, you know, sort of like the funny court jester coming in there for a second, and then let's get back to the meat rock, you know. And so that was frustrating, but always really, really refreshing when somebody would come up to me and say, I understand what you're doing. That's, I That's great.
But then, but do you appreciate that until they, and then they follow it up with explaining what they think you're doing, and you're like, oh, that's not really.
Yeah, well, that's happened.
Did that just happen just now?
No.
Oh, thank God.
That's happened a lot.
I would have felt like such a tool. No. Such a tool. What do you, I mean, now that you've been doing this long enough that you've been able to sort of, you know, just artistically have all these, you know, you have a bunch of albums and you've, how do you write now? Like, what are you reacting to now? Do you ever feel like, you know, I have to react to something to write, or can you just kind of get to that place?
You know, I have a pad of paper in my back pocket right now, and I just take notes when I walk down the street, or if I'm talking to someone and they say something interesting, I'll steal it from them. You know, whatever.
You're like,
you know,
a comic.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly like a comic. Do you see a lot of parallels between comedy and...
Absolutely, yeah. A friend of mine, Eugene Merman, have talked about that at length over a bottle of... I think it was something really horrible. But
it's a brown liquid.
Yeah, something brown. But yes, there's a certain mathematics to it, and there's a certain... that's a lot about timing and geometry and... It's applying a sort of a formula to different things in the world. And okay, here, what would happen if I turn this upside down? And mm-hmm. There's a certain thought process that I think is very similar to music and writing songs that is in comedy. And it's sort of about that. The sadness of life too, where there's a cathartic moment where, oh, you know, it's painful. This is painful, right. And then you have to laugh. And there's some sort of weird inversion of that happening with music. So,
did you ever think that about ever trying comedy, or did you ever think?
Not so much. You know, I thought about writing comedy one time because I thought. Saturday Night Live is not working out lately. And, you know, and my friends and I were getting stoned a lot, and it was just like we were coming up with some good ideas. And I thought, God, if only we could just, like, you know, give them a few ideas. And so, anyway, but I would never have the... I'm too busy with my guitar right now.
I don't know. I really feel like there could be, like, a fun music slash... a music show with a comedy element to it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's, you know...
It's Nick Thune.
No, when in doubt, go animation. When in doubt, animation.
Yeah, totally.
You could totally do that. I think a cake animated series would be fucking awesome.
Yeah. Well, there's something good about not having your face in the, you know, in the video.
But also just being able, just having this kind of like rubber world that you can manipulate.
That a rubber world that directly accesses people's child brains.
Yes.
You know? That circumvents a lot of the other stuff.
You know, half the people can enjoy it because of the whatever sort of message you're getting across. The other people just like to drool at shiny colors.
I like pretty colors.
Look at all those colors moving around all over the place.
Whee! It's magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've thought a lot about animation. That's interesting you bring that up. Yeah, maybe that's a way that I can stay home once in a while.
So you're married. Do you have kids now?
Yeah, one daughter who's about 20 months old.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
I mean, I know that's still almost 2 years, but it must still seem kind of new.
It is. It's crazy. It's you know, it's absolutely surreal. Obviously for that reason, I wouldn't mind being home once in a while. This last year, I was gone a lot, and it was hard to, like, get these photographs of my daughter on 4th of July or my daughter on Easter or whatever, all these, like, you know, photographs that I'm not sure of. And so there's that. And so, you know, maybe this animated thing, you know, maybe that's the way it... But I don't know if people want to pay for anything, so how do I make food?
There are ways to make food from cartoons. I think there are ways to make food from cartoons. We'll talk about it. I have ideas.
Maybe
John,
we can contact some major corporations to sponsor us.
that's part of how you do it.
I think so.
That's part of how you do it. I really think there's something fun here. But you know, do you find the older you get? Because this happened to me like a couple weeks ago. I was driving around, and Talking Heads' Once in a Lifetime came on, and it just
made more sense to me than it ever had. Like, I always thought it was a great song. Mm-hmm. Whenever you listen to my, really listen to it, and then you start to get older, and you're like, yeah, how did I get here? And yeah. So when you're touring constantly for years, and I'm sure there must be something in your brain that all of a sudden is like, wait, what am I still doing? How am I still? I just didn't even question it before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think people they set out in a certain direction, and that there's a momentum to that direction, and you just every once in a while you wake up and you're like, what the hell is going on? And that's okay, there's something to be said for going in one direction for a while.
Right.
But it shouldn't make you incapable of turning into a different direction.
No, it is definitely, your brain gets locked in crazy patterns. Yeah. Especially if you're math-minded, which it sounds like, you said your dad was a mathematician?
He's into math. I'm into, I think, intuitive math. I'm not necessarily into real math, but yeah.
Did you go to college?
Yeah, I did. I studied English, though. I was not practical in that way. I get math, but I'm not a mathematician. But what you were going to say is that math is it's hard when you have a sort of mathematical understanding of the world. It's hard to. What were you going to say?
Well, I just say it's hard just to be an English major. I mean, just in the sense of like, oh no, there are loose interpretations. Like, yeah. For instance, one of the reasons why I have such a hard time not being sickened by the concept of politics is because it's just, there's no, I mean, with a few exceptions, there's just no finite answers.
Yeah.
Everything's just so gray.
Pretty hopeless.
And weirdly hopeless, and it's just like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then I don't really know the real story, and people are telling me a bunch of shit that may or may not be all the, I need all the facts in front of me, and I need to organize them, and I need to see how they, how they sort of add up and group.
Totally.
And it's very hard for me to.
And the more you learn about a subject that you maybe once felt passionately this way about, the more you learn about it, there's, well, the other side has this. Also, that's a valid concern as well.
What do you mean?
And that's why people become older and sort of more educated on issues, they become less passionate about those same issues, which is dangerous, which is just as dangerous as being a young dumb shit.
Yeah.
They're both kind of.
But I also wonder if part of that with, with like people who get older is that they, that there's just like a physiological thing where they just lack certain chemicals flooding their brain because they're not supposed to be hunters anymore.
Yeah.
And so they're just like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I still give a shit. I wish that that our country could grapple with some of the real issues that are facing us. I wish that we could do it really quickly, because I feel like it's a high stakes adventure right now.
Do you feel like the stakes are higher now that you have a baby?
Oh, certainly, yeah. Because before I had a baby, I had zero hope that we would make it, and now I'm like, well, maybe there's a little bit of hope.
That's kind of an interesting idea that maybe that just, you have this biological program running that's like, my genes are out there in the world. There's hope that there's gotta be hope.
I still don't have very much hope. And the way I rationalized having a child was, she's gonna have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
For 5 years or 10 years or maybe for a long time, but it's better than nothing, right?
Well, but I also think that, I think if you were to interview people from every generation, they would all say like, oh, why would we bring a child into this shit world? Everything's going, it's the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. Like, oh, the smoke's, the clouds, the skies are black now. Yeah. We're not going to make it.
Yeah.
And somehow.
It's exceptionally shitty right now.
They always say that, man.
I feel like they might.
We have science saying that. That's the thing. It's like, it's really like, it's not a matter of opinion anymore, though. I believe in science. I people are sort of cherry picking what they'll take from science. Like, oh, I love the flat screen TV, but I won't believe this other thing. That's inconvenient.
There were some shocking numbers that I was reading that even, I think it was something like 40% of Americans just reject Darwinism, period. Yeah. Just flat out reject it. And I don't think it's because they found a more sound scientific answer. I mean, I'd be willing if someone's like, no, I'm rejecting Darwinism because I've actually found out that, you know, there was this pod that came down from, and I have the proof, and then we...
I bet it's just never been explained to them.
I think it may be they don't want it.
No, because they all think that it was a monkey fucked another monkey and then a human was born. That's what they think is the case. They don't understand the gradual thing that may have happened.
It's hard to also confirm.
Not even may have happened. It happened.
Somebody that lives maybe 60 years or so, 70 years, we're lucky. It's hard to even conceive of the amount of time that it would take for that monkey to become.
Yeah,
sure.
You or I.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still, it's just, you know, I guess you just take it for granted. You're like, oh, well, you know, because of the internet, I mean, you know, we have all of human knowledge. I mean, you could just research. It's not like 100 years ago where, like, getting to a library was, you know, could have been a deadly journey, you know, across hundreds of miles and cholera. You know, it's like, it's fucking...
Really? When was that ever a problem?
I mean,
I feel like libraries were more than...
No, but think about it.
You had to go 100 miles through cholera to get to a library.
No, but even just think about, you know, the late 19th century, you know, like they're developing major parts of the United States, and it's not like people just had access, like ready access to, you know, tons of human knowledge. They just had sort of whatever.
I mean, how many times have you been in a room where you're asking a question and someone out loud says, why don't we just look it up?
They just had whatever crafts they had. Just listen to Midlake's album. They explain all of the 19th century.
Listen, I had to write papers with encyclopedia sets. I know how to. I'm the last guy that had to do that. I'm the last generation that had to fucking crack open an encyclopedia.
Do you remember that, John McCrae? Not to sound like an old guy now, but you remember when you had to write a book report by going to a library and sifting through a card catalog?
Yeah.
I can still cite sources.
Paper cuts and everything. Oh, so hard.
What do you mean this is checked out? I need this. How? Yeah. I'm not going to get a grade if I don't.
When's it due back? 3 months ago.
Well, so, you know, things are getting easier and some things are getting harder. I think it's harder not to get cancer now, probably, you know. I think there's, like, how many people...
Is it harder not to get cancer, or is it more readily diagnosed?
I don't know. I think that it's definitely... I think of how many people do you know that have gotten cancer in the last 5 years?
It's probably...
Zero. I'm luckily at zero.
You are?
Thankfully.
Oh, my God.
Nobody I know has gotten cancer.
Why are you looking at me? I hope I don't have... Are you trying to... Don't put it on me now.
I just gave it to you.
No, I don't want to get cancer that...
That's how you get it, right?
No.
Yeah.
That's how you get cancer. You discover that your friend
has never had a friend who's had it, and so...
It's pretty much... Yeah, that's...
Oh, man.
Sorry, guys.
This sucks, man.
You both have it now.
No, why would you do that to us?
Yay!
He's got a show.
I'll take it back.
All right, take it back.
You still have it.
No, but I'd be willing to say that, you know, because we're working with more synthetic materials than ever before...
Yeah, we've introduced literally hundreds of thousands of new chemicals into our homes and our bodies.
Yeah.
And we think somehow everything's going to be okay.
Right.
It's not going to change anything. Well, actually, it is going
to
change.
Listen, I sleep next to an airport base station.
Do you?
Yeah, it's right next to my head. I like the green light. Let's mean everything's okay.
It just the pulsing of the light just kind of drifts you into...
Oh, it doesn't pulse. My network's working. If it pulses, you have a problem.
Do you find that with the baby that you are hyper aware of, like, we can't have that in the house, we can't serve her food based on this, or do you kind of just go, well...
Or we just give up, yeah.
Yeah.
probably a combination of both of those approaches.
I mean, at a certain point, you're like...
Depending on how I feel that day, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just like, fuck it. I can barely do what I have to do, and I don't need to introduce more worries. But other days, I'm like, well, you know, maybe it'd be better to give her the organic thing or whatever.
Right.
You know?
And even that, we're just like, well, we just cross our fingers that organic does actually mean what we think it means, and it's not just...
Yeah.
No, these are just a different set of chemicals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it means probably something for another year, and it'll be diluted. And
right.
There'll be a new term, but you know, honestly, yeah, it's a struggle, and I think, you know, you just have to do the best you can when you feel like it.
Maybe, you know, you might, I think that if you actually got some time at home with your family, like an extended period of time,
yeah,
you probably wouldn't feel as hopeless. I mean, I think I just don't think we're really built to be traveling nonstop year in, year out.
Tell that to Magellan.
I think falling asleep in a hotel room to CNN every night probably isn't very good for
you. Probably not the way. Yeah. And there are some towns you get into where it's just like, well, the only hotel options are depressing and slightly less depressing.
Right, yeah.
And there's, you know, the toilet kind of moves off the base and there's the weird stain on the counter. And
why do all hotel room doors have to slam?
All of them.
Why do they all have to shake the foundation of the entire hotel every time one closes?
That assurance you get.
I don't like that at 5:30 in the morning.
And why does every hotel have to have at least 1 to 3 people who don't seem to understand the concept that other people are in bed at 3 a.m. when they come back from bars and have to...
Hey, everybody.
Oh, my God. Did this happen to you yesterday?
No, thankfully, it did not happen yesterday. But I feel like it's been happening a lot lately.
Well, the real terror of a hotel is the ice machine.
Oh, yeah.
You get the room next to the ice machine.
Yeah, oh, my God. So what happened one morning, I think it was in New York, I'm like, oh my God, I knew I shouldn't have been right next to the ice machine. And so the ice machine's going, I'm like, okay, they'll get enough ice and it'll stop. And it doesn't stop, and like 10 minutes go by, it's still going. 20 minutes, it's still fucking going. So I'm awake now, you know, I'm fully, it's like, it's dark out.
I hope the story ends with you seeing a penguin outside.
Well, I wish. It was just this guy with like all these ice chests, and he was gonna have a day out or whatever. He was filling all of his ice chests.
I have to say, I've stayed in a lot of hotels, I've never once used the ice.
I've used the ice machine. No. I've used the ice machine until one day I was kind of like, oh wait, hundreds of people a day just dig their hands into this. And then you can see like the rust on the edges where the hinges are just leaking into the ice. Yeah. Like there's not...
I'm extra not using it. Ever.
There's not really any quality control in a hotel ice machine. They just freeze water.
It turns into a thing after a while where I've challenged myself to never use one. Much like I've never gone to the bathroom on a plane, I now challenge myself.
What do you mean you've never gone to the bathroom on a plane?
I've never been to the
bathroom. You've never even peed on a plane?
You've never flown to Australia, apparently.
I've never flown to Australia, but I do cross-country quite a bit, but...
Wow, really? That's impressive. Yeah,
thank you.
So you can't drink liquids on a plane?
I sure can. I can hold it. Like a champion.
Oh my God. What is it you're worried about?
I just don't want to get up.
Oh, is that what? Oh, okay.
So it's not really the window, and then it's like.
So that's really more laziness than any kind of sanitary issue.
Well, really, it's I don't want to bother the people next to me. I like to get the window seat, not move, and I always say to the person next to me, "I'm not moving. Don't worry."
That's very generous of you, actually. That's you're a good flyer.
I try.
Are you tour busing it right now?
No, we're just we do a combination of both. Okay. Right now we've been off tour for a few weeks, so I've been home and this sort of interrupted my time at home, these couple shows.
When do you get to go back?
Tomorrow.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I'm happy.
That's nice.
Where's home for you?
I live in Oakland, California.
Well, you guys were from Sacramento, right?
Yeah. Right. I'm originally from the Bay Area. I grew up in Berkeley and moved to Sacramento when I was a teenager and, you know, started the band there and, you know, so.
What was the music scene like in Sacramento?
It goes through phases. It's been horrible and good. It's usually a combination. There's always like some like at least 2 bands that I think are really good.
Yeah.
you know, I think it's it was better when the rent was cheap before the downtown kind of gentrified. And now what used to be $300 rent is now like $1,500 rent. When I lived there, it was $300 rent or $375 or so.
That's awesome.
And so I could spend more time playing music and writing songs and less time waiting tables or washing dishes or whatever shitty job I could find.
Sacramento has an excellent train museum.
Really? It does. Yeah, it is truly top notch. Yeah.
I've been there.
I didn't know that.
It's fantastic.
I'm coming up to Oakland next weekend for a comic book convention, Image Expo.
Oh, cool.
I like it. Oakland's kind of nice. I think it gets a bad rap, you know, like for being sort of like, oh, you're San Francisco's shitty cousin. Like, but there's really, I've driven through it. There's nice, really nice parts of it.
And there's violence.
Sure.
Yeah, that's kind of exciting. I think it's actually got much better.
We were just up there for the violence time. We were just there when that Occupy thing happened.
Yeah, we were there.
San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's got a lot of issues. Like you know, there are a lot of really great cities that people don't think are great. So yeah. It's one of those, I think.
I'm from Lowell, Massachusetts. It's great.
You always say it's not great.
It is.
Okay, good.
Parts of it are.
What is your favorite like undiscovered gem of a city that you never would have thought? Oh my God, this place is actually amazing.
I think Philadelphia is really underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's violence there, just like Oakland, but it's also got cheap rent and really interesting people that are, musicians and artists and degenerates and freaks and stuff that kind of add a lot of character to that.
Yeah.
Also, there's the architecture there is pretty great.
I feel the same way about Minneapolis.
I think Minneapolis is really cool too. Yeah,
it's a gorgeous town with like a cool like just enclave of artistic people. Yeah.
Really good quality of life, except for the weather.
Except for like 7 months out of the year when you want to murder yourself because you live in a fucking ice forest.
Yeah, it's rough.
But other than that, it's a fucking great town.
Yeah, we'll never feel that way about anywhere in Florida.
No, Florida is just a humid wasteland of.
I've never been in a place in Florida and been like, hey, this is great.
I lived in Miami when I was a kid for a couple years, and it's just like the fucking summers. You want to tear your goddamn eyes out.
Humans should not be there.
It's like a place where people would wear loincloths.
Yeah,
but you have to wear, trousers.
Yeah.
and shirts and clothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you listening, Mom and Dad? They're probably not.
No, all the people dry out. They need to go, they need to be in the humidity to like rehydrate their skin. That's why they.
Is that a thing?
I don't know. I'm just trying all to right. make a. I'm trying to big. I'm trying
know
to
if
figure
you have
out why.
Reason. I don't have a reason.
No, I don't know. But everyone just, like, my dad moved to Florida when he got old. Like, everyone just fucking. That's,
I
like,
did
that's
it
what they do.
For 6 days.
I know, but you're not old.
I know.
But you will be if you're lucky.
You don't get cancer.
Again.
No, please don't be there. I think we're almost, we're kind of at the end of our hour, but I don't want to keep you because you have a show starting really soon.
I should probably take a nap, yeah.
But thank you for being here, John. And, well, I mean, in your place of where you're performing.
Yeah, yeah, good. Well, thanks for coming and thanks for visiting and nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning, oh maybe it's 4. I am thinking of you, wondering what I should do, but I'm finally cutting through this haze. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, oh maybe it's 5. I think I'm alive and I think I'll survive. I'm finally cutting through this haze of love, haze of love. For days and days and days I'm in a haze of love. Yeah, you don't love me like I love you. Although you pretend I can see this, well, and I'm finally cutting through this haze of love, haze of love. For days and days and days I'm in a haze of love. It's 5 o'clock in the morning, oh man. maybe it's six. I am sick of your lies, I'm sick of your tricks. I'm finally cutting through this haze of love, haze of love. For days and days and days, for days and days and days.
All right,
for days. I'm an unknown individual in an unattended car. Hey, welcome to Chicago or wherever you are. New York to London, Barcelona to Berlin, Sacramento, California, we are leaving again. Away, away, away. I'm trying to come home, but I'm here with the band. Traveling, unraveling, I'm staying on track. My plastic utensil has broken in half. Away, away, away,
away, away.
Is still on the plane. Seconds turn to minutes, minutes turn to hours. I'll get you a lifetime and a grave with pink flowers. Away, away, away.
Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 15% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code Nerdist2. That's Nerdist and the number 2.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
from the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying,
lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.